So we've been looking forward to for quite a long time having Jane with us. Now, have we got some stuff in the background? Oh, just in case we can't see you.
I'm snooping around.
Okay.
Hello.
So how is the PowerPoint going to work? Are we just going to have those
I
in the background?
Just going to be
running. Okay. So we're going to have some pictures just going on in the background of Jane dancing and some of the things that she's been doing.
They're very big, aren't they? I've never seen them so big.
It's one of the joys of coming into a cinema with a rather large screen. So what I thought would be really helpful to do would be for Janie and I to have a conversation and to let you listen in on what it means to be involved in some of the creative world. Now, Jane, you joined Sadler's Wells Royal Ballet at... Are you okay on there?
Yeah, I'm fine. I just keep swiveling to the right. It's quite fun.
Okay. So if we just end up disappearing and talking in the wrong direction...
Yeah,
yeah,
no, I'm fine.
You joined Sadler's Wells Ballet at 18.
Yeah, I was 18.
And
yeah.
Over the next 13 years... You danced in all of the major theatres around the world.
Most of them.
Most of the major theatres around the world. And you became, after a while, you became the first soloist of Sadler's
yep.
Wells,
yep.
which is the touring company of the Royal Ballet.
Yeah, as it was in that time, yeah.
That's an extraordinary feat. Can you just tell us something about, maybe something about the best roles that you had, some of the ones that we perhaps know of, and what it was like to dance those things. Because I suspect there are some people here, some of us who are interested in dance, some of us who are passionate about dance. So it'd just be quite good to hear some of those.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best roles that I had were mainly comedy. I think there is some... Oh, there's me in my dressing room. Look at the mess on there. That's a lot of mess in the dressing room. We were very untidy offstage. I love the comedy roles because I think I loved getting the response from the audience. Hey, look, I'm going, hello. And I loved the dramatic roles. I think because actually I wasn't a very confident dancer, so if I had a character and I was somebody different on stage, then they were the roles that I enjoyed the most. So I did like being evil. I know that sounds a bit weird saying that in church, but they were some great juicy roles that were amazing to dance, especially when I was a jumper. So there's quite a few, oh, that's a comedy role. There's a few of the pictures of me jumping high in the air, and I suppose that was the thing that I loved doing the most. So the comedy and the dramatic were probably the highlights of my career, and if I look back at it, I did love doing those. I didn't like doing the tutu and smiling thing with the tiara on my head. So that's why I suppose they were the most exciting roles to do.
And
Swan Lake. I suppose, yeah, what we were saying is certain ballets that people might know is like Swan Lake and the Nutcracker. I think Swan Lake was probably one of my most favourite ballets because we got to dance a lot in them. Because you have to remember that when you're in the company, you'll be churning out ballet after ballet in 8 shows a week. So sometimes you are just, hello. it is like a job, and so it's not always exciting. And then, so when you get opportunities, and then obviously as you grow, you develop through the company, then obviously that gets a little bit more exciting.
So can you tell us how you joined Sadler's Wells at 18, but you came to ballet fairly sort of like late in life, didn't you? So just tell us a little bit about how you started in ballet and how that came about.
I mean, I think as a little girl, I was bouncing off the walls, and we did live in a flat, and it was a nightmare for my mother. I think she did strap me in a high chair because of the... that's attractive, isn't it? This was before I took up ballet, and there was no mousse or gel in those days. So my mother used to blow dry my hair. It's gorgeous, isn't it? Yeah, that's really... Yeah, I'm not ashamed. It's fine. And then my friends went to ballet school, and I was asking for years, actually, can I go to ballet school? And my parents really couldn't afford it. They were very busy with their business. And then when I was 11, which is quite late... she said, okay, you can go. But obviously I arrived at this ballet school thinking I was just going to join in with my friends who were also 11. And I remember the ballet teacher looking at me thinking, gosh, she looks like that, which was with the fuzzy hair and the goofy teeth, and saying, I don't know. So she had to look at my feet and my legs, and she thought, actually, They're quite interesting. I know that's a funny thing that you look at people's legs and feet, but that's what you do when you're thinking about being a dancer. And she sort of went, right, I'll take you on, but you'll have to be with the five-year-olds. So I had to sort of like go, oh, okay. So I sort of skipped and galloped with all the five-year-olds, and I had mothers going, how old are you? And but I did sort of like go very quickly through those grades. And she kept saying, right, come to this grade. And I was getting grade one, grade two, grade three. Then I took my grade four exam. So it just progressed from there.
So you said to me that your ballet teacher secretly put you into an exam.
Yeah.
Just why did she do that? And what happened?
Yeah. Oh, that was lovely. Yeah. It was, she put me into this major ballet exam. She had had the dancing school for sort of like the, 6 years, and nobody had done a major ballet exam. So she said to me, I want to put you in for this major ballet exam. We're not going to tell anyone because, you know, in case you fail. And but I had only been dancing. I had only been dancing about 8 or 9 months. And she said, let's just do it and see what happens. So I passed, which was good. And then she announced it to the school. And then four of the families that had been with her from the very, very beginning just were in uproar, and they were so angry that their daughters hadn't been entered for this ballet exam, and why had I, who had only just been there 9 months? So it was my first experience of ballet mothers, I suppose, and how freaky they can be, and also that the jealousy and the sort of like the whole idea that their children were just as talented, why weren't they entered? And they weren't for me because they obviously didn't know me. And so it was sort of like a little taster of that people aren't always going to like you in the theatre world.
So it's quite interesting just to ask you about that then, really. So if you are always, you know, you were being promoted and you were given roles and in any sort of like situation, you know, whether you'd been dancing, you know, from mm-hmm. two or three, you have been given roles above other people, and actually they do get a little bit jealous. And so how did you cut? And I'm sure, you know, in later life when you're, you know, at Sadler's Wells and traveling the world and doing all these fantastic performances, there will always be people that didn't like you because you were doing what they wanted to do. So how did you cope with that?
What helped a lot was I became a Christian, and I became a Christian at the age of 13, and that was actually through my ballet teacher, which was amazing. She invited me to a youth club called Crusaders, and I hadn't been brought up in a Christian family, but I did have sort of, I did the brownie thing, so I did church at Christmas and Easter and went, yes, I believe in God, but I'd also say, oh, I don't believe in God. But anyway, so when I became a Christian, I think that was like a real turning point for making a decision to be a ballet dancer, and that I was going to enter this world where actually my identity was in God and not in my career, or that the fact that I was a ballet dancer, because actually that is going to come to an end at some point. So I, you know, for me to rely on God and know that he's faithful. And I think he did, you know, and also the Bible says, you know, love those that hate you. You know, it's far better to love those that hate you. You know, it's easy to love those that love you. And I think I learned that at a very early age. And when I was at the Royal Ballet School, when I was 16, so that's when I went full time, I had girls that had all been through the whole vocational system, and they'd been from the Royal Ballet from the age of 11, and they'd been told from 11 to 16, they're incredible, they're the best in the world. And I turn up and they're like, who do you think you are? And I did get that. It's like, who do you think you are? You haven't been through the Royal Ballet. I have since the age of 11. How dare you get a role with the Royal Ballet? And I do remember thinking, I just let them say it. And then I would get to a point where I'd say, no, you can't treat me like that. And actually, some of them became my best friends, and I do tease them sometimes about the way that they did hate me for being in that place. But I sort of quite enjoyed it, because I think I think it was part of the battle thing, and I just thought, well, okay, Lord, you know, I can just keep showing that I like them and that I can love them, but also not to be walked over. And I think that is quite important, because as a Christian, you might think, you know, I've got to be humble and let other people get ahead of me. But also, I think it was just being clear that, you know, yeah, you are different, but you're not going to walk over me. Girl. No.
No, girl. Don't. No. Okay. No. The interesting is just readjust the seats, yes?
Yeah.
So the interesting thing is, not only would you have had people sort of like disliking you for taking roles and stuff like that. Mm. But obviously we don't want to overemphasize that, because, but how did you keep that, the pursuit of excellence? And how did you keep thinking? Because there must have been times when you thought, you know, actually, this is, one, it's really hard work. Okay, physically, it's really hard work. It's really quite demanding. I suspect that traveling around the world and going to lots of different theatres, it appears glamorous, but a lot of the time, it's just quite it's difficult, glamorous. You know.
Yeah, no.
And then, and on top of that, you're thinking there'll be internal conflicts that are going on, and there'll be other people that don't like you because you're doing. So how did you keep the pursuit of excellence and keep saying, no, I want to keep going? Because I think, so this is a statement, Anna Christian, but there are lots of times when, as Christians, sometimes we hold back from really doing all that we could do in God because sometimes we feel, oh, we shouldn't be doing that.
Mm.
So I don't know if you've got anything, any insight you can give us onto that.
I think, I mean, it's hard because I think working hard was very much part of my makeup before becoming a professional dancer. So, you know, I had this intensity of practicing 6 hours a day and I loved it and I wanted, you were always trying to achieve something more. And then that goes into the company with you when you're touring and you're dancing all day and you're performing at night and you're doing 8 shows a week and then traveling. There is a sense of an energy that we all had and the discipline. I suppose there was an incredible discipline in that world which goes with you. And then you carry that into everything. So, and I think for me being in the company as well is that I wanted to be excellent as a witness. And I suppose that just was the thing that kept me going was like, I want to be different. And I want to be excellent at being different in a way that, you know, it is kind of be a bit blinkers on and it is a bit about me in the arts world. But I was all like, no, I want to show them Jesus. I really want to show them Jesus. And so I don't know if that really helps. I think it's just wanting to please God rather than man. I'm not here to impress man. And I think that was a battle. I think that is, obviously you want to be liked by the director and the director would love you 1 year and you'd be doing all these amazing roles and the next year he would go off you because somebody else can come along and then you'd just be taken off a role and then you'd be given a new role. So it was very sort of like, it was never consistently, oh yeah, I'm amazing, this is great. It was like, oh, this is an amazing year and then the next year I'd have injuries or, you know, or other complications.
So the thing that, I guess one of the things that we can take from that, the pursuit of excellence is never a steady upward track.
No.
It's an up and down pursuit of a goal that God has given you. Okay.
Yeah.
Afterwards, when Janie and I have finished speaking, I've asked one or two people to who would be willing to share some sort of like prophetic words. And I think it'd be really good because we want to pray for people afterwards that would, you know, not everyone has a career in dance. I mean, you know, I had to turn down a career in dance many times.
I can see that, Duncan, yeah. Just the way you're sitting now, it's just, I can see that dancer in you. The inner dancer.
It's a natural poise that I've got. Anyway, but, no, okay, yeah. Should I do a quick twirl? Hey, yeah. You don't get that for nothing. Anyway, so we do want to pray for you that you have these encouragement, prophetic, that there will be many people in many different walks of life that actually that you will pursue a sense of excellence in everything that God has called you to do, that you would not back down actually in being the best person that God has made you to be an influence in there. And we've got a small video clip, Steve. Can we go with that? Is that okay? So just a quick brief interlude. This is do you want to explain?
Nearly 30 years ago. Just to say, it's just taken. I was on Richard and Judy this morning a long time ago in the early 90s, and so it's a clip of me. Just you can just see that I did dance in point shoes, and so it's just it was finding out your shoemaker, and it was a funny little program. So there we go.
Steve, you. Okay, fantastic. Okay. So I want to ask you, we'll show the video when it comes up. Can I ask you an awkward question?
I don't know. Depends how awkward.
Oh, is that it there? Oh, I'll save the awkward question then.
Oh, that's at the end. That's just
it needs to go back a bit.
Yeah, it's like a few seconds before. Yeah, oh, there, that's it, because it's quite funny seeing Rich Judy.
My awkward question that you've been anticipating is, a lot of Christians struggle with the arts because, I don't know, and I think sometimes they struggle with dance as well because it's an intensely like physical thing and it's about bodies and, you know, but it is this sort of like sexual undercurrent and I don't know, and I think... So I think sometimes Christians steer away from that because you think, oh, we don't really know how to handle that, and we don't really know what to, you know, what to do, and can we really encourage that? And I don't even know how to phrase the question, but how did you respond to that? So as a believer, how did you cope in those sorts of, in those settings? Were there roles that you just like you said, no, I had to turn down, or were there roles that you took that you were then subsequently criticised for? Or how did you cope with that?
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's one thing that I'm sort of passionate about, that the church and Christians don't judge an artist coming into their midst, especially if they don't really fully understand what it's like. And they do make judgments. And I think in my early career, I did have Christians saying to me, why? How can you be in that situation? It's so immoral and it's so sexual. And I was like, what? I don't know where they got this idea that because we wear leotards that suddenly it's all some sort of sexual group that we all love touching each other, and it was just so weird. And so for us, I just want to say it's not like that. I mean, it's no more immoral than any working environment, and it might be a little bit more exposed. And of course, it was a company that toured a lot, so everybody knew everybody's business. So, but it's no different to the world, and so I think people judging you. I did feel like, oh, I am immoral. Maybe I'm a bit too worldly, and I think there is that slight edge of being an artist that they must think that you are a bit edgy and, you know, you might do things or dance things that are dodgy. And I think when I was in the company, obviously being in a classical ballet company, it was a lot easier, because I think if you're in a contemporary dance company, you may find that you will end up doing stuff that you think, I really don't want to do this. But you make that decision each time. It's like being an actor. You know, you might be in a film that that you think, how can a Christian be in that film? And but they're making that decision before God, and it's their relationship with God is the most important thing. And if they make that decision to be in that film, then I would totally respect it. So there was one ballet that I'd just been promoted to first soloist, and my name was on the flyers, and it was a principal role, so it was out in London, the flyers and everything. And I was like, oh no, I just can't do this role. I really can't do it. It was a rubbish ballet anyway. And it was taken out of the repertoire pretty quickly. I think we did two seasons of this ballet, and it was basically the goddess of sex. And I just sort of went to my vicar and I went, I really don't think I can do this, can I? And he was like, well, it's up to you. But, you know, I had pressure from my family that you can't not refuse to do it. You will ruin your career. you've just been sort of like given this chance and now you're saying you're being picky about the roles. But when I went to the director and I just said, I just knew that I just couldn't do it. It was a very explicit role, had no meaning. There was it was just a ridiculous ballet. And I just said, I just can't do it. I know the choreographer really likes me. And that was hard because I'd very rarely had a choreographer that really loved me. And when choreographers came into the company scene from outside and you were light, that was a really good thing. And to be picked by her, I was like, oh, I can't believe it's this ballet. And because she was always so encouraging. And the director was all like, well, my dear, you know, I'll say you don't do this one because it's going out of the rep, but you doesn't mean that you can't do other things. And I just went, no, that's fine. So I have been a gypsy and I have been a harlot and I have done roles that are very sort of lighthearted and great classic ballets. But for this, I was all like, I just can't do it. And then I said to him, can you talk to the choreographer for me on my behalf? Because he said, oh, yes. Well, of course he didn't. So I had to face her, and she hated me. I mean, it was just, her response was awful. But what was interesting was all the sort of, you would so-called immoral people in the company, the ones that are all a bit edgy, as you would sometimes expect, they said to me, we would have been so shocked if you had done that, taken that role. So I knew that I had made the right decision. But then I did a ballet. I was in The Prodigal Son, the ballet. It was a ballet that was created in 1939, George Balanchine. It's an incredible ballet. And I was the siren. And there was, and it was a decision that I made. I thought, no, this is good for me to do it. And what was interesting was that when he choreographed it, he was all like, the siren is a thief. She's not meant to be representing the sexual side of it, although she pursues the sun. And I think there's one of the pictures coming up when I'm sitting on his shoulders, actually, bless him. I had to stand on him, sit on him, and all sorts of things. But I was after this jewel that he had. But what was incredible that whole time of doing the ballet was I was explaining it to the guys the whole time, the story of the prodigal son. Well, how cool is that? You know, and there wasn't excellence in the piece. And it was a wonderful role to do. But I didn't think for one minute, oh, no, I shouldn't be doing this. So sometimes it was clear cut. I mean, I don't think it's an easy decision to make.
And I think you would say that as a church, we need to support artists more.
Yeah, definitely.
To pursue what they feel God has called them to do, whether or not it has a picture of a crucifix or a waterfall in it.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the thing that I've come across, and now being more a freelance artist, it's sort of, and I'm engaging more in the church than I would have been as a dancer. So it was, again, easier because I was away so much. Now that I'm engaging with the church, and obviously New Frontiers in some respects hasn't been always engaging with the arts, and it is Catalyst, is really the Catalyst Festival. That's why we called it a festival, so that we could, well, we do have to bring the arts in, I'm afraid. We do have to have, you know, flags and art and music and dance and stuff, and that's really important. So trying to, it's harder work with Christians, and it shouldn't be like that, because I think they forget that God created the world. So yes. He's the ultimate creator.
I just want to talk briefly about the church. But so you were at Sadler's Wells for 13 years.
Yeah.
For 9 years, you didn't see any of your friends come to Jesus. Is that right?
No, but what was amazing as well is that it's the most incredible environment to be a Christian, because everyone's so open. Everybody wants to talk about philosophy and spiritual things. So I had every year I had an evangelist at evening, a supper party. I had like 30 or 40 dancers. We would debate. We would have all sorts of discussions. They all came to Billy Graham. They thought it was hilarious. So, you know, dancers are sort of like, yeah, we'll do that, you know. But nobody went forward. And I remember thinking, oh, Lord, you know, when is, you know, somebody going to get saved? And after 9 years, I did think, gosh, you know, maybe I'm not in the right place or whatever. And then the company moved to Birmingham and became the Birmingham Royal Ballet. And I was thinking, should I give up, do something else, you know, look after the poor, do all that sort of thing. But I was sort of like, long story, decided to go to Birmingham. And then everybody started getting saved. It was incredible. And people, it was just, I was there at the right time. And so then I saw 10 people get saved. There was a lot of spiritual battle going on at that time. I had a lot of injuries. I was having an up and down time in my career. But everybody was getting saved. So it was an incredible. So I did love that. So to sort of say that, oh, how can you survive in that world? Actually, it was, for me, far better, easier world to be in as a Christian than being a mum in the playground.
It's really exciting, isn't it? You know, sometimes you think, oh, shall I just give this thing up? And not always, but, you know, sometimes breakthrough is just around the corner. And at your lowest point, you begin to trust in God more, and you think, and then suddenly something happens, and it's very, very exciting.
I think I want to say as well that it wasn't dependent on where I was with God as well. So if I was still struggling or having a hard time in the company, God still used me. So if we keep waiting for, oh, yeah, I need to sort this out in my life, and I've got to have this great relationship with Jesus, actually that's not the point. The point is, are you available for him? And he will use you, because it's all about his timing. So it was a sort of like a humble moment going, okay, yeah, God, it is about you, and you've got your plans, and I just happen to be here at this time. And I do remember people saying, you know, that's why you're there. It's not just about your career. It is being a world where you see very few Christians.
So you, the ballet world has was a while ago, but yesterday you dropped off some portraits down to some families in Highgate for quite a lot of money, didn't you, that you'd done?
Not enough money, no.
So yeah. you are still, that is where you are. You are still... Yeah. Mrs. Creative, and still
multi.
Yes, you're still doing the stuff, and I think so. Do you feel encouraged in the church, or what can the church be doing to, what would you love the church to be doing for you to encourage you in your art?
No, I think it's quite exciting, because when Gus went full time with the church, I did suddenly put that elder's wife thing, and I've got to bake cakes. I can't bake cakes, and I can laugh a lot, but I wouldn't say I was the greatest counsellor in the world. And I did suddenly think that I needed to go out on the streets and help people that are disadvantaged, and I was going, God, I need to do this. This is real. Art isn't real. And then, of course, every time I tried to do anything like that, that didn't work. But then I'd get a new job. Somebody would ask me to put on production, choreograph, teach, be involved in a Channel 4 project, you know, with inner city kids. So there's loads of stuff that I was going, oh, yeah, no, I am an artist, and I just happen to be a Christian. It's not sort of like the other way around. And I think what I love the church to be more encouraging about is that artists want to do art for art's sake, that they're not suddenly called to face paint, decorate the room, and paint a rainbow, because it will be understood, you know. And if I want to do mad abstract paintings, and I'm, you know, and but behind that, the heart of me is that I'm filled with the Holy Spirit and I love Jesus, then that is the most important thing. So I think for Christians in the church, they need to engage with the artists, hear the dialogue. You might not always understand it. There are sometimes I don't understand, and it doesn't mean that I'm the greatest artist in the world either. But I'm just pressing into what God's giving me, and I'm going, okay, God, I'll keep going with this, and actually realizing that art can change culture. And I'm just, it's becoming more and more sort of like adamant that Sputnik, and as we get together.
Sputnik, the project.
Yeah, it was the project, which is part of Catalyst, is that we want to be an art movement that can change culture and shift it. Because, yeah, it has got a bad name. And I think people will look at the secular or the media and think, oh my word. But actually, there might be some people behind the scenes that you don't realize are Christians and are making a difference. And being in a world where it is sort of a bit me-orientated, but there are people there that are changing people's lives. So, and it's not to be afraid of stuff that you think, I don't understand that, so that can't be right. So it's encouraging that, really.
I think, I love hearing what Janie is saying, and then you know, you go out for a walk, and you think, the incredible artist, you know, and we got up Friday morning, and the most extraordinary, we joke about sunsets and sunrises and stuff like that, but Friday morning we got up early to pray, and it was the most extraordinary sunrise that I've seen out of our house. And I just thought, God, it's an extraordinary thing. You do not have to paint something of such extraordinary beauty, but you still persist in doing it. And so we love that, and we think we want to encourage artist to keep producing stuff that reflects the glory of God, because it's just absolutely wonderful.